I'm Katie and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
Okay, so I'll start off. My sobriety date is January 8th, 2010. I was 15 at the time. So I have been about a year and 10 months sober now. So that's exciting. I'll start off. I've had a normal life growing up, very decent. I was never abused. We were never broke or anything like that. And then, I don't know, that's about it. Like, I had both my parents and stuff. And then, let's see, I started drinking, in about seventh grade, like, near the end of it. I remember my first drink was a beer, and it was because my brother gave it to me. And I remember, it's weird because I didn't really like the taste of it, you know? And it wasn't until I started drinking hard alcohols when I actually enjoyed drinking. And that brings me to my first drunk. We were drinking Captain Morgan, and we had a few handles of them. And so we each had our own handle. And it was me and three other girls. And we were just taking swigs right out of the bottle. And I remember, like, this weird, warm, fuzzy feeling. And then the next thing I knew, I blacked out. And that's how the rest of my night went. I woke up in the car the next morning, and I was locked in the car, and I opened, and the siren went off. So I was stuck in the car with this car alarm going off, and some girl ran and got me and brought me back up to the room. And I remember the next morning, I had the worst hangover, and I was like, I'm never going to drink again. But I ended up drinking that night. It was a long weekend. So that's how that started, and it started off very slow, and I don't really remember when it turned into an everyday thing. I want to say over the summer, because I remember we went to Las Vegas and we were drunk for 2 weeks straight, and then we came back home to Tucson, and then that's when I met this girl, Lauren. She was a dropout at school, and we became best friends. And that's really how my whole drinking career started. So, I don't know, it was a daily thing. I would get picked up from school, go to her house and drink. And then weekends, we would pretty much, I wouldn't eat Thursday or Friday, so that way by Friday night, I'd get really, really drunk. And then, like, we would wake up at, like, 7 in the morning and start drinking, and that's how our weekends went. I remember I got caught a lot, but my parents didn't really see it as a problem until, like, the fourth time I got caught. And I was on a golf course, and we were drinking on the golf course, and I remember we were drinking beer, and I stole a bottle of Malibu from my parents' liquor cabinet. And next thing I knew, I woke up in my bed the next morning, and my mom was screaming at me. She's like, "Do you know what you said to me last night? Like, I've never seen anyone so drunk as you were." And I guess I cussed her out and told her I hated her. And so then that's when they made me start seeing a drug counselor. And this drug counselor told me that I should get out of Tucson, not for rehab, but just like as a break from my friends. So I ended up going on this one-month backpacking trip. And so I was forced to get sober that whole time. And then, I mean, it was a good experience, but when I came home, it kind of just started up again. I told my parents, I was like, "I promise I won't drink. Can I please go out?" And so they ended up letting me go out the night after I got back. And I drank, and that lasted a good 2 weeks, and then I got arrested. It's actually a funny story. It was me and I want to say 7 other people in this little car. And I was the only one drunk. And the driver was naked. He took his clothes off and threw them out the window, because that's the type of person he is. And he failed to stop all the way at a red light, when turning. So we got pulled over, and me and him were the only two that got arrested. I think I blew a 0.023. I remember that. And so he brought me down to juvie, the officer, and I had to spend the night there. And the next morning, my mom got me. It was around 8 o'clock-ish or so, and she brought me to my counselor, the drug counselor. And he was like, well, you came on a good day because there's a girl here I'd like you to meet. Her name was Alexa, and she was in the program. And she told me if I ever wanted to go to an AA meeting, I should call her. So I called her about a week later, and she took me to my first AA meeting. And this was in September or August 2009 or so. So I did that, and then I remember my first AA meeting ever. I've never been so nervous in my life. I was shaking, and I didn't want to be there. And at the end of it, I got bombarded by girls who asked me for their numbers. And I was just kind of like, why are you talking to me? I don't want to be here. And then I started going for a little while after that. And a couple weeks later is when I found my sponsor. Because this girl's like, you should ask Camille to be your sponsor. And I was like, okay. And I never did it. Until one day she's like, I'm not going to take you home until you ask her to be your sponsor. And I was like, so I finally did it. And it was actually, as soon as I asked, it was a lot better because she was really nice about it. And she just called me every day, find a home group, read the first 164 pages, you know. And so that's what I did. But so I was sober for about 3 months, and I kind of BS'd the first three steps, which is why I think I relapsed, because I ended up relapsing like late November or something like that. And it's weird how it happened, because I was at this kid's house and they were all playing beer pong, and some girl was complaining that she couldn't finish her beer. So I grabbed it from her and I drank it. And then as soon as they all went inside, I was pouring all the excess beer in a cup. And then that's, and then from there, I remember feeling like really jittery and like, cause there wasn't enough to get drunk. So I was like, and I felt guilty for a good 10 minutes and then I got over it. And so, yeah, I was out for a little bit. And then that's when I got sober a second time, January 8th, 2010. Cause my parents found out I was drinking again and they told me to call my sponsor. So I did. And we had I ended up meeting and I was like, I have something to tell you. I relapsed. And she was like, I figured. And she laughed about it. And it took a lot of that pressure off, you know, like it wasn't really a big deal. And she told me, like, a lot of people do. So, I don't know. And I think that, I think it was worth it, definitely, because then I know I'm an alcoholic. And so, yeah, that's my drinking career. Afterwards, I don't know, I worked the steps. I would say fourth step was the hardest, definitely. It took me forever to write it all out. And that's actually the step I relapsed on. I did half, and then, I mean, who relapses on their fourth step? I don't know. I did. But, so yeah. And then I've sponsored only a few girls. There's one that I don't know if I'm still sponsoring her, but she calls me like once every 2 weeks. She's like, just checking in. I'm like, okay, try to call me tomorrow if you can. But I don't know. Whenever someone does ask me to sponsor them, it's really exciting. Like, I don't know, because it's kind of like, oh, I actually get to help someone. And then, I don't know, like, I guess I'll talk about school. Like, being sober in high school is kind of hard, because a lot of my friends drank from school. There's this one kid, he's always like, just smoke weed. It's not a relapse. I'm like, okay. Tell that to everyone else in AA. So, I don't know, after a while, you just kind of, the more you say no, the less they ask, which is good. And for a while, I just avoided it, and, like, over the summer, all I did was hang out with AA people. And then, I mean, just recently, I'm starting to find that balance, you know, between school friends and AA friends. But it's like, I don't know, like, I'll go to parties, and kids will be drinking, and you, as long as I have cigarettes and soda or anything, I'm good. And I know I can always call someone if something does happen. So I don't know. Yeah, it's definitely been a long, almost 2 years. Like, my parents got divorced. That was really hard. I don't know. There's been other issues that have come up. And I feel like being older, you know, it's like more, you know, you understand divorce more. And someone told me, they're like, well, it's just a test to see if you're going to drink or not over it, you know. And it's not really worth drinking over because it's none of my business whether to get divorced or not. I don't know. Like, and as for the whole, like, never having a legal drink, it's weird because, like, when I was drinking, it never did seem illegal, even though it was. It just seemed something normal. And, like, when the cop arrested me, I didn't think he was doing it because I was drunk. I thought it was because it was curfew and we were trespassing. So, I don't know. Should I go for 4 minutes? And whenever. I would say that's about it. I definitely, like, the last 2 years, like, they've been hard, you know, and, like, the bad times seem way worse, but the good times seem, like, 1,000 times better, and I think that's what makes it worth it. And the people in my life now and the relationships I have with my parents and friends and everything, like, I don't know, the promises did come true for me, I would say. I don't know. It's crazy. I have one last thing. I remember I went to Askapot last year, and I was sitting in the audience, and it was the main speaker meeting, and I was like, in 10 years, that's going to be me. But 1 year later, here I am. I don't know. But that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Katie. Please welcome our second speaker, Stephen L. from Casa Grande.
My name's Stephen. I'm a recovered alcoholic. God don't desert me now. So I'm kind of going to go into the brokenness a little bit and a little bit of where I came from. You know, drugs is a big part of my story. You know, that's my experience. I came from a good family. You know, I also tried to get sober in high school, you know. You know, just the brokenness for me was trying to stop, and I just couldn't stop, you know. And, you know, I tried everything to my knowledge, you know. I tried smoking weed just at night. I tried smoking weed in the weekends, you know. But I always ended up testing positive for heroin or meth by the end of the day, you know. Any mind-altering substance I put in my body today it blocks me off from the sunlight of the spirit, from this program and God. You know, for me, I'm one of those, you know, one of those guys that, you know, I never shared this with anybody before. It just came to my mind the other day. You know, I wanted to stop so bad one night, you know, multiple times. And, you know, I taped together this picture of my family on this piece of paper, and I hung it up on my wall and said, quit for, you know, stay stop for them, right? But I used the next day, and that's just some of the insanity of my addiction, you know, and that was really powerful for me because I have all these pictures of my family, you know, my mom, my dad, and my brothers and everything else, and I still couldn't stop. And that's not what, I didn't understand that before I came into here, you know. All I knew is I wanted help, and I couldn't do this on my own anymore. You know, I pretty much tried everything. I tried moderating. You know, I tried switching one substance from another. And in the end, I failed miserably at it, you know? And, you know, my brokenness was, you know, just to go into another couple scenarios, I went on this real hard 3-day binge and, you know, overdosed all 3 nights in a row, you know? First night I was in the hospital, second night I was on Harkins Theater bathroom floor, you know, about to die. And third night I seized up on the side of the freeway by the airport in Phoenix. And what did you know it? I was doing it again, you know, that same night, an hour later. You know, I couldn't remember what the fuck happened an hour ago, much less a week or a month, you know. It was the most scared I've ever been in my life, and I still did it again. You know, that's the insanity of my addiction. You know, like I said, I came up from a good family, you know, a lot of good activities and stuff like that. But once I put drugs or alcohol into my system, I felt good inside. That was my ease and comfort, you know. I wasn't raised too much in a religious background or spirituality background. So I had no idea who my God and my conception was until I came into these rooms. And, you know, that's my standing point today. You know, I rely on a relationship with Him so I can stay connected and I can keep this obsession from coming back. I'm 20 years old and, man, it was hard to ask for help, you know. It was really hard. Through my experience, I came in through the detox centers, you know, they introduced me to the meetings. And, you know, the first time around, I went back out the first time, you know, I thought you could smoke spice like a gentleman, that shit they sell at the convenience stores, you know. And, or was I wrong? That shit fucks you up. Just as much as weed does. And, and that's my experience, you know, and I'm back to snoring pills and back to smoking heroin again, you know. And, you know, that is my experience today. And I didn't know if I really wanted it this time around. I think my higher power was some sort of spiritual intervention this time because, you know, my story is how I got here today was this random thought just came in that, you know, I'm going to go to detox to get $30 more from my parents because I'm out of money. I'm out of solutions for anything, you know. And so that's what I did. And I didn't really know if I wanted to quit or not. You know, I think that was just God's hand intervening in my life. And, you know, I got a taste of this recovery thing, you know. And I was in a different fellowship at first, you know, for the first month of my sobriety. I was pacifying off the meetings, working a step a month, you know. Meeting makers make it, right? No, they don't make it in my experience. So I got back with my other sponsor that was coming out of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, we started to get to work. And, you know, whatever he told me to do, that's what I did. You know, I wasn't defiant about it in the beginning, but I started to be in, you know, middle of my recovery. But, you know, I just did whatever he asked me to do because I had no clue what this program was about. You know, I had no clue it was about God, you know, until I started the second time up. And, you know, that's my experience. So I had to do, you know, he had to teach me all these things that I've had no idea about, you know. Like I said, I had no idea it was about God until I came in here, my own conception of God. And, you know, that was really the brokenness for me and the insanity of it all. And, you know, the miserable feeling, I can remember the detox like it was yesterday, man. I couldn't sleep for 3 weeks. I just wanted to crawl out of my skin and it was just, it was miserable, you know? And that's what I feared the most trying to stop was that detox. You know, I couldn't sleep for shit. I was just restless, irritable, and discontent. I stretching arms out every, you know what I mean? Oh my gosh, you know? The hardest part for me was not sleeping. And I really had to stay in contact with my men and my support group then, you know, because I usually just smoke myself to sleep and use that, you know. In my experience, I can't wing myself off, you know. I can't just smoke to go to sleep because I end up smoking in the mornings, you know. That's my experience, you know. I'm just going to smoke this amount at night just to wing this off and go to bed for a couple days and just feel good. You know, go to some meetings after, you know, and then it turns out to in the mornings and afternoon and all damn day, you know. And, So as I was getting to work on these steps, you know, calling my sponsor, getting with him on the weekends and doing this book work, he told me to find where I can relate with the big book, you know, kind of substitute, you know, what my poison was with what it says in the big book. And, you know, that's what I did. And I got sober in AA. And, you know, this big book teaches me what I need to know about how to get connected to this higher power and how to pass the message to the next alcoholic or addict. And, I'm not going to sit up here and lie and say the fourth step was just cake and it was simple and easy. You know, I was full of fear on that fourth step, man. It was just sharing all these things with another human being, all these skeletons I had in my closet from my past. You know, it was the scariest thing in my recovery, you know, sharing this with another human being, you know, being afraid to be judged or any of that stuff, you know. And I just can remember the relief after that fourth step, that fourth and fifth step. You know, in 9 years of my active addiction, not once did I wake up not wanting to do drugs. And you know, that next morning I woke up and didn't want to do drugs, and that was a miracle in itself. You know, I started making those amends the next day to my family, you know, just to get some relief, just to get this relief, you know. He showed me the format, and it wasn't just a simple mumbling of I'm sorry, you know, it's what can I do to make this right. And you know, that's how it was for me. And I did whatever they said, and most of them said, you know, keep doing what you're doing, stay sober. And you know, that's my experience through it all. You know, it's tough being young in sobriety because, you know, there's not a lot of people in my area that are doing the work as in my age group. So it's real refreshing to see all you young faces here, you know. It gives me some real hope and strength. And so now my primary purpose is, when I go into a meeting, is to, you know, I catch myself doing it all the time, just scanning the room for the newcomers. You know, I'm going to give me a live one tonight. You know what I mean? and that's what I do today, and that's what I get to do. That's a result of this program and God and you know, having good sponsorship. I rely on my men for a lot of things because sometimes I need to get pulled out of my own delusion, you know, and sometimes it takes more than one person. And, you know, life is great in recovery today. You know, I love being recovered. I love that obsession not coming back. I'm resolved to doing the work. And it just feels extremely great, you know. I remember before I had spirituality in my life that, you know, number one, I was a self-centered, egotistical prom queen. And number two, I was miserable, you know. My self-esteem, poor me, you know. And I don't have that today. I have confidence today in myself, you know. And that's what the steps did for me, you know. It took away the obsession to want to use drugs for me, and thus taking away the allergy, the abnormal reaction. And, you know, I had to understand this is a... I have an obsession of the mind and an allergy of the body, and I did not know what the fuck that meant when I got here. You know, so I kind of dumbed it down and put it as an irresistible thought to use right when I wake up. A thought that overclouds all the thoughts, and an abnormal reaction. Like my mom, she can drink two beers and put it down and be good for a couple months. And that just sounds so strange to me, you know? Because when I pick up two beers, I'm off for another couple months, you know? And that's why I couldn't understand, like, why ain't I normal? You know, I'm an abnormal person. You know, anytime drugs or alcohol is put in my system, I'm off to the races again. And, you know, that's how I learned what it means to be an addict or alcoholic, you know, is those two things. And I can't stop on my own without spiritual intervention, without the spiritual experience they talk about in this book. Yeah. And I want to talk about, you know, sponsorship. Sponsorship was great for me. You know, I got the privilege to take a guy through the work that I used to use with. And he's a year younger than me. He's still in high school, which is cool. You know what I mean? We have a lot of the same experiences. I graduated high school this year in May, which is something I struggled with for all my years of addiction. You know, I want to quit for 2 weeks. I give a week under my belt. I go back to school and do all this good stuff. And 2 weeks later, I'm booted out of the motherfucker again, you know? multiple schools and multiple attempts, and they never worked out, you know. But until I got God in my life and in this program, you know, I was able to buckle down and do that. And that's a big accomplishment in my recovery today. You know, I have to be willing to go to any lengths to do this work. God is everything or he's nothing now, you know. I have to put in the effort to make that point across, you know. I can't just take back my will at any time, because then I start getting complacent. You know, I just had an experience with that where I have to have my men pull me out of my delusion, you know. I was really going into self-will a couple weeks back. I was really going into self-will, you know. I was chasing the women. I was not doing God's will at all. You know, I was doing all these things, and I wasn't praying or meditating. I wasn't doing what I was supposed to do. And when I do those things, you know, I'm on fire with it. You know, I actually want to take sponsors to the work. I actually, you know, want to be productive throughout the day, not wasting energy, you know. And, you know, this is my first time actually speaking at something this big, which is a really great experience, you know, for me. And just to kind of go back to sponsorship a little bit, I don't let the newcomers look for me. I look for the newcomers. You know, that's how they did it back in the day, and that's how my sponsor told me. You know, you get them qualified, and you see if they're in the right place, and you start working them through the steps if they're willing to go to any lengths to do so. And, you know, a couple questions I ask is, are you done, and are you willing to go to any lengths to be clean and sober? And then I kind of describe the vicious cycle to them a little bit, you know, kind of get them to relate with a couple stories. And, you know, that's just, it just affects my spirituality, and it's just something I'm passionate about doing, you know. I've had a lot of great experiences where I'm working with a guy at a rehab center. He's on fire with it. And then, you know, come graduation time, his family comes, and you can see the tears in their eyes, and it just gets really emotional for me, you know. And that's the result of doing this work. And for anybody new in here, we need you in this fellowship. You know, we need you on the firing line with us and carrying this message, you know, to help reunite homes through God's work. And to, and it's just a great feeling that you don't want to miss, you know. And just a couple of cool things in recovery. You know, today I can wake up not feeling irritable, not feeling pity potty myself, you know. It's not all about me anymore. You know, I'm not as self-centered as I once was. You know, the self-centeredness is starting to vanish. You know, I'm thinking about what I can do for others. And that's great in itself. It makes me feel good. You know, I'm not thinking about using right when I wake up, ever. Not thinking about ever throughout the day. If I'm having a bad day, then I get with God. Because, you know, at 3 a.m. when my guys ain't answering, you know, that relationship with God is going to save me. You know, so I have to get on my knees and pray and do my evening review, the page 86, and do my morning meditation. And, you know, it truly is a blessing for me in my life today. Some of the cool things in recovery is I get to make a car payment today. You know, I get to have bank cards today. You know, I never had a bank account in my life. I get to have jobs today. You know, all the things that I wanted, I seen in normal people that I wanted, you know. A normal life, a somewhat normal life. And, you know, I come to meetings as much as I can, and my primary purpose is to carry the message to the newcomer. And, you know, that's what I get to do today. And I have my family back in my life, which is really great, you know. My little brother asked me to play a game with them or something, you know, and I'm not falling asleep, nodding out on them, you know. That's really cool. And just cool stuff like that, man. It's just, it happens regularly in the fellowship, doing activities like this, camping, and just doing all these cool things sober, you know. And my life is great. You know, I have no complaints. You know, spiritual principles are the answer to all my problems today. And that's all I got.
Alright, please welcome our third speaker, Lauren Kay from Phoenix. Hi, I'm Lauren. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Lauren.
God, I'm so nervous. Well,
My sobriety date is Valentine's Day of 2009, so I'm 2.5 years clean. I got sober at 15, and I had a really good childhood. I was stealing by, in elementary school. I started stealing, but I didn't know I was stealing. But I would just go to the mall with my mom and steal earrings, from Neiman Marcus. And I just wanted them because they were pretty. And I in my head though, I wasn't oh, I'm going to steal this. And I was already manipulative. I would purposely cry to get what I wanted. I was never religious. Parents used to take me to church when I was in elementary school, and I just remember being in a room with a bunch of kids watching VeggieTales, and that was the only remembrance I have of being in church. I'm not going to share too much about what it was like. I drank a lot and I did a lot of drugs and I did a lot of Adderall. That was my main thing, besides drinking. And, that was the one thing that made me a fucking addict was, I had full on unmanageability with that stuff. And I used to live in Ahwatukee, and then I lived in Scottsdale when I got sober. And I was just very lonely. I had pushed away all my friends because it was getting really bad. And, I was just very alone, and I became a loner user. I was just using by myself in my room all the time. And, my parents would catch me with stuff, and it sucked. I got consequences. I was just being very shady. I was sneaking out and all that stuff. I have another addiction, which is my eating disorder, and I've had that, I was doing that for probably 6 or 7 months, in sobriety too. And, I was, that was when it was really bad. Because every day consisted of that. It wasn't even about really drinking or using anymore. And because it just occupied my whole day. That was my whole day. And I went to a clinic for it, and that was the only form of rehab that I ever went to. I used to go to therapists and all that stuff, and counselors, but that was the only recovery thing I ever went to. And it ended up working out that my mom didn't think I was that bad, so she didn't want me to go there. So I kept doing it, and I was fucking 90 pounds, and came into rehab. I got tricked into rehab, and my intentions were not to get clean at all. I don't even think I'd be here if I wasn't as lonely as I was. And so they tricked me into going to rehab, and they said we were going to a counselor at 9 o'clock at night. And, so I showed up at a rehab, and, I met with this counselor, and every other counselor, clinic, whatever, everyone that I talked to, never understood where I was coming from, and never had been through the shit that I went through. And, I hurt a lot of people when I was getting loaded. So I met with this counselor, and he like related to me with like the loneliness factor, and I did not get like loaded for that long. I got loaded for like a year and a half, and but I went down really quick, and I don't know why, but I just did. And like, so I just like talked to him about it, and I feel like with young people, it's more of just like the loneliness rather than like we lost our kids and like our houses and like just a bunch of materialistic shit. I mean, yeah, like we get our phones taken away and stuff, but it's not that big of a deal. Like, it's a fucking phone. So it was just really cool, and I like met all of these people in the rehab, and they were all so like welcoming and loving, and that was really cool. And I came into rehab thinking that I didn't have a drug problem or a drinking problem. I was like, I just have an eating disorder, so I don't know why I'm here. Cause it was a drug abuse program. And it was cool because like I met this girl in the rehab and she had an eating disorder too. And, it was so awesome to like think that I was so different and like, no, like this isn't for me. And to like meet someone that, was in the program and had the same problem as me kept me there. And just like drew me in a little bit more. And, I, like I said, my intentions were not to get sober at all. And I struggled a lot in sobriety with like, well, not that much, but in the beginning I was like, I'm so young, like I have like a couple more years to do this, like this sucks. And I went outpatient. And I relapsed twice in sobriety. The first time was off of drinking and smoking weed, and the second time was off of Adderall. And the last time I got loaded was Friday the 13th. And the next day was Valentine's Day, so it was in February. And like, it was hard because, like, I knew something was wrong because I went on this trip when I was newly sober, and I was like, I'm not going to get loaded. Like, it's going to be okay. And everyone was like, don't go. Like, you're going to get loaded. And so I ended up going, and I ended up getting loaded. And it sucked because like the whole time I was with my old friends and I was like, make sure I don't get loaded. Like, I just want to be clean. Like, I want to do this. And, like the next thing I knew, I was like drinking champagne in the hotel and classy. Like they weren't stopping me, you know? And if they were like, dude, don't, I was like, I don't care. Like, I'm going to do it. And like, there's nothing you can do to stop me. And they were like, go for it. So I think that shows me something. And so, yeah, it's been rough. Like, I'm not perfect by any means. I don't have the obsession anymore. The obsession to use and drink is totally lifted. But I still have those, like, thoughts where I'll be, like, having a good day. And I'm like, oh, like, I kind of... like, drinking sounds fun or whatever. And I, like, still, like, have those thoughts, which I feel like everybody does. Like, it's just normal. It's not like you don't ever think about drinking or using ever again when you get sober. And recently I've, like, had thoughts of, like, am I wasting my teenage years by doing this? Like... and, like, I'll just get those, like, delusions and those thoughts, and it's cool because I do have a lot to live for today, and, like, I have a reason to be sober, which is truly amazing. I'm on my steps for the third time right now, and my first inventory took forever, and I don't recommend that. Just like do it all the way. But I like took a lot of breaks on my inventory, and I didn't get loaded over my inventory because I only got loaded within like the first couple of weeks that I was sober. And since I like have been sober, I didn't do my amends the first time. I think I only did like 3 of them. But this time through my steps, I'm actually doing them, and they've been really awesome. And most of the people so far have been like, just stay sober, do what you're doing, blah, blah, blah. And I made amends to my dad, and it sucked so bad because he was like, yeah, you really did hurt me, and like just started going off, and I was like, shit. Like, why can't you just, like, be like, yeah, keep doing what you're doing? And because it did really suck for him to be like, you hurt me a lot, and, like, you betrayed my trust, like, blah, 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 hey. but it's cool because I feel like if everyone just said the same exact thing, like, it wouldn't, like, really, like, hit me, you know? And it wouldn't feel like, because I've made, like, I made amends to my brother, and we used to like physically like hurt each other, like not in a playful way, and like made amends to him, and he was like, oh, I didn't notice anything, you know, like you're cool. And I was like, okay, like what? That whole amends story is insane. I'm gonna share it really quick. So my brother has seizures. And I had, like, I had before, like, never seen him have a seizure, and because he always has them when he's by himself. And, like, in sobriety, like, I have, like, my brother has been, like, the main topic of pretty much, like, every huge change that I've ever gone through. Because like it is like the biggest part of my life that I want to work on. And, my dad was in town visiting, and I made my amend note cards or whatever. And, I was unwilling to make amends to him. And because I was like, we've never had like an emotional, like, oh, I love you so much, and I want you to know that I care about you or whatever. Like, we've never had a relationship like that. And so, like, just the thought of it, like, scared the fucking shit out of me. Like, I was so scared. And I was like, he's going to think I'm an idiot, and he's going to hit me, and, like, all this stuff. And, like, I really thought it was an amends that I was going to have to keep for years and, like, slowly become willing to work towards it. And I was with my dad and my brother when one day my dad was visiting because my parents moved to California when I was 17. So I've been living on my own since 17. I'm 18 now. My dad was visiting, and we were at a Jimmy John's in Tempe, and my brother started seizuring, and he was like looking at a fan. And like, he just started freaking out, and it was like the scariest thing I've ever seen. And I was like really scarred, and he was seizuring for like 20 minutes, and there was like this woman that was there, and she was like, oh, my husband has seizures, and like my mom wasn't there. I haven't seen my mom in like 6 months, and like, I'm still, like, a baby, so I'm like, hello, mom. And it's really hard not living with my mom and not seeing her that much. And she was there, and I'm pretty sure that she was an angel. Pretty sure, because she was, like, comforting me through the whole thing. And it was awkward, because it was, like, in a shop with a bunch of strangers. And so I was like crying and like, oh my God, like this is so scary. He was like blue and like foaming at the mouth. And, and my brother's 21, and I was just really scared, and like I went to the hospital with him, and the whole time I was by his side, which is really weird because like me like getting loaded, like I probably like would have like had the obsession to like drink or use, because when I see fucked up shit, like I want to get loaded, and I don't want to stay sober, and I want to numb out and forget about it, and so I thought that that was truly a miracle, and so I stayed in the hospital with him and my dad for a little bit, and like as soon as like that situation happened, I was willing to make amends to him like the next day, because I was like, if anything happens to my brother, like I don't want him to like, because I know that like you can't die from seizures unless you like hit your head or whatever, but I didn't believe it because he was turning blue, so I was like, that's bullshit. And so I was like, if like anything happens to him, like I don't want him to like go without him knowing like that I want a relationship with him, and that like, hey, like I'm sorry for or like just making amends to him about like being a shitty person in his life and a shitty sister. And I made amends to him, and like I said, he was like, oh, I didn't notice anything, and he's like, whatever you think you did to me, like I forgive you. And so that was really cool, and it's still like a little bit rocky, but like our relationship, but at least I know that, or at least he knows that I care about him and I'm like here for him. And so yeah, like getting sober is not easy, and especially being young, because like I still get those thoughts of like where like is my life going, and just like thinking about the future, and it's really scary, but it's awesome, and it's cool to like think about that I have a lot to live for now. And I dropped out of school sophomore year when I got sober, and I didn't go back because I was like it's gonna be way too hard to go back and see all my old friends, so thankfully I didn't have to. And I went to the school in Tempe, which was like an alternative school, and I finished with nine credits when I came in. I finished within 8 months. I was 16. I got my high school diploma, and I've been in college ever since 16. And I'm not like this genius, but like I just like got my stuff together and got into college early, which was really cool, because I'm like my third semester right now, and like I'm actually doing well. So if you guys think that you're not good at school, I feel like we are really smart people, and especially like with survival skills, but like knowledge wise, I feel like we're really smart people, and I feel like if you truly want to like go back to school and like get good grades, you can, because last semester I got like all A's and like a couple B's, and same with the semester before. So I'm really happy with my life right now, even though it's been rough, and I have a higher power now, and I never how much time do I have? I thought I was an atheist when I was getting loaded, because I really wanted to be, because I thought it was cool. But I wasn't, because when I came into sobriety, I realized that, like, I wasn't fighting the fact of believing in something greater than me, so I feel like, yeah, and I, like, started off with just, like, love as my higher power, And that was just where I started. And I feel like it's really helpful because I like, even though I wasn't an atheist, like, I did not like the word God at all, because I was resentful. And, you know, I blamed, like, everything on him, because it was easy, you know? And, like, me and my parents have a great relationship today, even though they live in California. Like, the relationship, I feel like, didn't start until they moved to California. Because, I mean, you can only, I feel like you can only live with your parents so long when you're young, because they drive you crazy. And, I had to live with my mom for, like, probably, like, 8 months by myself and my brother, and I was, like, ready to kill her, because, like, we're just so much alike, so it was just really hard to be in the house with her. And, but, yeah, our relationship today is great. I live on my own in an apartment. I, like, have my own money and still have to get a job, but I'm, like, living on my own and I'm okay, and that's really all that matters. And I love my life today. I love my friends. I've met so many people in recovery so far, which is great. And don't be scared to get to know people. It's awesome. So, yeah, that's all I got.